This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
6 a.m. on the 2nd of April 2019. I'm Julian Ng and joined by Lin Ma as well as Sharis Abdullah. Good morning, guys.
Good morning, Julian.
Good morning, Julian.
So as is usual at the 6 a.m. hour, we bring you discussions that are the lighter side of business. What do we have today, guys?
Not so light. Something quite... quite
heavy, I guess.
Heavy in some ways. Our fascination over crime stories, a crime series that we have on Netflix, on HBO, on Astro, and so forth. So BBC seems to find that there's enough evidence out there that we are fascinated about all this. So is this fascination a problem for all of us?
Yep, so we also have, on a slightly lighter note, we have a local startup based in Ipoh, which is seeing its product used by some of the big tech names like Apple, SpaceX and NASA. So it's quite an interesting story. Apparently their software helps engineers shorten the time they spend on projects.
Good stuff. And if you want to join in on the discussion, you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Coming up next, also something not so light, which is mental illness among teenagers. And in the meantime, here's Suspicious Mind by Elvis Presley, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, this is The Morning Run, and that was signed, sealed and delivered by Stevie Wonder. You're with Julian, Lin and Sharit. A Singapore teenager responding to a question on Quora voiced her personal experience that mental illness in the country's, in Singapore actually, in the country's school and junior colleges is largely overlooked. And this is an article from MSN, and she says that the competitiveness fostered by Singaporean parents is creating a very toxic culture.
Yes, so, and it results in mental health issues like depression and anxiety. And I don't think this is a mentality solely linked to Singapore. I think we do see it in it's quite prevalent in other parts of Asia as well. But we hear a lot more about it in Singapore because Singapore's culture tends to be very competitive as a whole because, you know, they're struggling for like so few jobs. I remember when I was in university, the Singaporean students were all, you know, they really embodied the term hustling all the time. They were first-year students, were always in the library, always studying.
Kiasu.
I wouldn't...
Kiasu mentality.
Yeah, okay.
And I say it endearingly.
I don't know whether or not it definitely is more prevalent now, but I wonder if it was prevalent back then as well. But it's just a matter of our awareness on the subject has sort of increased over the years. I mean, over the past 10 years, the subject is now more open for us to discuss. And definitely with the more competitive and the changing environment, as you said, and Singapore has always sort of embodied that in some way. We always have a perception of our friends, down south in Singapore. But for us, I think it's a growing subject.
Yeah, I think so. And I know of people in Singapore whose kids would be occupied the entire day, right? You start with schools, you've got tuition, piano lessons, karate, and so on.
Enrichment classes is what they're
Enrichment
called.
Enrichment classes?
Yes.
Okay. I didn't know there was a word for it. I mean, the fact that there is a word for it shows how big that problem or that advantage is, however you want to look at it. And then there is the other side of things. Like, I have many friends, Malaysians, who have migrated to Singapore, and they make it a point to shield their children from this kind of scheduling because they just don't want to expose their kids to the stress, and they rather have the kids do slightly worse than their peers in school.
Yeah, because I think grades are ultimately not the end of the world, right? So, you know, grades can obviously they do matter. They can help you get into a good university, but ultimately it is your skill, it is your luck, it is timing that helps you get a good job and helps you succeed in life. And I feel like this overemphasis on good grades, you know, study hard, get straight A's, ultimately all that it does is that it deprives kids of essentially having fun because they don't have time to hang out with their friends, you know, because they will be just shuttling from class to class to enrichment
activity. That's important too, right? Like hanging out and making friends and playing, that's very important to a child's development.
Yeah, and that idea of them needing to be happy. Because at the end of the day, mental illness, as we know it, is not just about stress. It's about what stress does to your body. For example, all the chemical imbalances, the hormone imbalances that occurs and at the and prolonged one as well. I mean, as they gradually get it becomes accustomed to your physique, and that's when you start feeling, for example, depression or bipolar disorder and so forth. I wonder if it's not just I don't know if it's stress is the only cause, but I think it's also that disconnect between reality and also present, and connection between parents and children, how that could sort of
I think that's very important.
Yeah, alleviate stress, for example.
I think the family environment to recreate a support system is so important, but the problem is that the parents are busy trying to put food on the table. And that's when these little problems can snowball into something that's so big. And you're right, because we are getting more awareness on this and the stigma on mental illnesses is reducing. And that's a good thing because everybody does suffer from it, some to a bigger extent than others. So this is a problem that has to be addressed. And it leads to, I hate to use all these buzzwords, right? Better productivity and better happiness index for the country, but certainly something very important on a personal level.
Yeah, definitely. I think it is very important to have that support system because human beings are social animals. I'm not sure whether the stigma around mental health is eroding fast enough for my liking. It feels like, particularly from the older generation, there is a pressure to hide mental illnesses because mental illnesses get dismissed when children raise them to parents, and that can be equally damaging because it really is just a horrific spiral as a result.
Yeah, and definitely it's sometimes a result of parents not really knowing about the subject, not knowing what to do, and as they become ashamed of it, and some are ashamed and some are fearful. So
many are suicidal.
It could result to that, and that's what we want to.
So the incidence of suicide among children, among school students, is rising, and that is actually a very worrying trend. So this girl also says that during her time, she met 4 kids at the top secondary schools and junior colleges in Singapore who have attempted suicide and seriously self-harmed themselves. So definitely a growing problem. Related to this is that Singapore is, according to a report from the World Economic Forum, is no longer placing exams at the top of the priority or importance.
Yep, they're trying to nip this competitive, overly competitive system in the bud by trying to foster like soft skills and more human interaction, I suppose.
Okay, coming up next, we'll also discuss this other unhealthy problem, which is our growing obsession with true crime series. So stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, this is The Morning Run, and that was Can You Feel It by The Jackson 5. And we're looking at this very interesting story. Are we really obsessed with crime stories? An article from the BBC is suggesting it. Many of us are watching documentaries as a way to unwind, but Netflix is airing a series like, Making a Murderer and Ted Bundy tapes. In fact, I think a few months ago, when Ted Bundy was at its peak, Netflix actually asked female viewers to stop saying how hot Ted Bundy was, because this is a serial killer, right? And Ted Bundy was the first guy to be labeled as a serial killer. I mean, he officialized that term serial killer. So the BBC is asking whether we are truly obsessed with this, and is that a problem?
Yeah, there's a lot of series out there. Besides Ted Bundy, prior to that, there's been the CI channel on Astro. I mean, that's the one that I at least watch. I don't watch it obsessively, but I think my better half does. And most of the time, it's more on the cheating spouses or something like that. I don't know why.
She watches that? Oh, you better be careful.
I know. And you'd be wondering, you know, what's the reason behind it? But I think for her, it's more of that curiosity as to why people actually commit such things. And also at the end of the day, the satisfaction of perhaps seeing those people get caught or getting, you know, the justice being being delivered, I guess, in some ways.
Yeah, I definitely think there's an element of, it's human nature. We are fascinated with people who don't conform to our societal expectations, and serial killers are huge anomalies because it's, you know, it's enshrined in every religious and non-religious moral code. You know, you don't kill another human being. And so that is it's one of the ultimate taboos. So there is this collective fascination with the people who do this multiple times because there is clearly something wrong with them that we as a society don't understand. I don't necessarily think that. So this article is asking, oh, you know, should we be so fascinated with true crime stories? Should we be more aware of? I definitely think there is an element of that, but I feel like the problem with a lot of true crime stories on TV as well as on true crime reporting is the media. The problem here is because the media has a tendency to dramatize and sensationalize. And when you dramatize a killer, you are therefore, you are sidelining the victims and the victims' families, and they should be the ones receiving the attention because they're the ones who've lost so much.
Yeah, I don't know. Because when I was watching, I think Making a Murderer was the second series that I binge-watched on Netflix, right? The first one being Narcos, which is, of course, another crime story where it sort of raises sentiments about the anti-hero, right? You start feeling for the head of the crime in Narcos. And then Making a Murderer was just a collection of actual footage. Mm-hmm. Actual footage from the interviews of this person who's supposed to be framed for murder. And I just found that I personally wanted revenge to be exacted on the perpetrator, right? Making a Murderer was different, but, you know, in series like Ted Bundy, I just wanted that guy, justice to be done on that guy. So I didn't necessarily subscribe to the anti-hero idea, even though Netflix was saying that this attractive guy stopped saying he's hot. But it's the problem. The other problem is it's so well written. It's so entertaining, you know. And I guess I personally have a fascination with the macabre, right? Because I like horror stories as well. And this is not far from, this is not so much different.
Yeah. Speaking about how well it's written, for an example, I mean, we all could relate. I mean, I used to love watching The Godfather. You know, that line, you know, I'm going to make that offer. How is it? I'm going to make him an offer you can't refuse. Yeah. You know, and it was a pop culture. It was something that you you wanted to sort of follow and, you know, just relate to, and something you want to share with your friends. It was particularly odd. But I guess what I'm getting at is that there's always that sort of bad boy inside of you in some ways that makes you want to watch these things.
Crime glamorous?
Yeah. I mean, when you were young, I guess.
Well, that's exactly.
There was that period, absolutely. I mean, during your teenage days when you want to, you know, push boundaries, I guess.
Well, that's what this article is saying. You know, that kind of sentiment is dangerous because we're so obsessed with it. It can develop into something. You know, Sharitz, you might have an inner serial killer, inner mafia.
I grew out of it.
Should we be worried? We share a studio with you every morning.
I grew out of it. Don't worry, guys.
Yeah, I mean, well, actually, we did discuss why people watch horror movies not that long ago, right? So, and I think there is this there is something that can be parallels that you can draw to that too, because people watch horror movies like Saw, like The Haunting of Hill House, because somewhere crave that danger, but watching it on TV allows you to experience that danger and that adrenaline spike without actually putting yourself in a dangerous situation. So perhaps this is also the reason there's something to be said here for true crime fans as well.
I think that people also like drama, so that's not a problem, right? Because drama is supposed to be slow and boring and doesn't inspire you to be a killer. But, you know, I just like all sorts of genres, and horror, I guess horror being one of them. I don't think that it will turn me into some kind of a monster. Let us know what you think about this. And we're coming up to the 6:30 news, and here's Fire by Bruce Springsteen, BFM 89.9. And that was Move On Up by Curtis Mayfield. You're with The Morning Run, Julian Ng, Lin Mark and Shariz Abdullah here with you. There is this local company from Ipoh called Radica, and this a local company, I guess, that has made good in the international scene. It's been around since 2005, and they are making software for the likes of Apple, SpaceX and NASA. I'm just wondering, when I read this story, whether more can be done by whoever, the powers that be, our government and everyone else in our national support system, to encourage more startups like this.
Absolutely. I mean, but at the same time, it's important to recognize that they did. They did this all by themselves in some ways, but they did get some support from some of the agency. For an example, Cradle. I mean, they have some coaching and mentoring program, which probably helped them in some ways to grow their business. But what I find fascinating about this company is where they're located. They're from Ipoh, aren't they? I mean, but before, previously, they...
Why is that surprising?
I don't know why is that surprising, but I do, what I can say is I do love the city Ipoh. But okay. Before Ipoh, they started off in Kuala Lumpur. Mm-hmm. But just that they realize that they don't have enough market here in KL, and since their customers are mainly from the international scene, so it's okay to just move themselves there. One thing about Ipoh, if you've been there enough, I mean, that's why it's a favorite of mine as well. It's the surrounding, it's the environment, isn't it? It's the culture that the city has. It's the whole coffee culture, and surrounded by it's a valley pretty much. So I wonder if that sort of inspires, gives them that sort of headspace to do something like this.
Yeah, I've never been to Ipoh, but I feel like it would
be... have never been to
never,
Ipoh. Wow,
we should
move to that story instead.
Yeah, but then I'm a KLite, born and bred, so I don't know whether I'd be able to necessarily relocate. But it's interesting. So one of the reasons they were able to relocate all of their people and their operations to Ipoh was because of cloud computing. So technology
That's
has
right.
advanced to a point where you no longer have to physically locate yourself in the center of things in order to manage to service your customers, in order to get that business. And of course, when they first started out, Radica weren't finding enough demand, so they decided to put their product up on the internet, and then they started seeing sales from companies in Mexico and in the US. So that's and since then they've just grown exponentially.
So what it says in this article from Vulcan Post is that engineers all over the world are required to design complex electrical systems that control machines, cars, ships, and so on and so forth. However, these designs must conform to international standards. And I guess if you can't find your niche at home, the world is your oysters, and there's a lot out there that you can do. Even getting a small slice of the international business will be many times more bigger than what you can get locally. And I think that's a good strategy.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you're considering Ipoh. I mean, we talk so much about how broadband and broadband access in Kuala Lumpur is one of the fastest at least in Malaysia, right? I mean, they're supposed to be the benchmark. But look at Ipoh. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, they probably have Unify and some form of broadband there, and it's sufficient enough for them to be connected around the world. So it really makes you question whether or not this whole talk and hype about needing extremely fast broadband.
Well, I think it helps. I think it definitely helps. You need that because we want to stream our Ted Bundys and making a murderer like without any glitches. But I think it's also the entire ecosystem. It's not just about broadband, but it's about the employees, the talent that you can find there, the commute to work, the housing, you know, the all, everything, the package, right? The whole package to make a certain location, the center for all these kinds of startups. I think at the moment, KL is the place. I'm not sure if there is a vibrant startup community in either Ipoh or even Penang. I think Penang may be more vibrant because Ipoh, it's a lovely town, it's a lovely city. I'm not sure how people travel into a center because I don't think the transportation over there in Ipoh is quite there yet. I mean, they're discussing the master plan in Penang.
Yeah.
And of course, in KL, we got various forms of transportation. So KL certainly has that edge over the other cities in Malaysia. JB, for example, you know, that news coming out that the RTS is being established to connect JB and Singapore. The Transport Ministry wants extra time, wants to delay that a little bit further. But, you know, all these other cities have transportation nodes and Ipoh is not quite there yet.
Yeah, and but speaking of environment, right? So we've just heard statements from Tun Daim Zainuddin, who's the chairman of the Council of Eminent Persons, saying that we need to build up Malaysia's capital markets and GLC. So it makes me wonder if, obviously, you know, Tun Daim is not a part of the government, but it could be said that it could be an indication as to where the government is going. So it makes me wonder whether going forward we will see more focus on the SMEs, because we have funds like, you know, Cradle, we have, you know, SME Bank, we have MDEC, Magic, but is it enough to encourage more companies like Radhika to grow and expand?
Exactly. I think it can be also be safely said that Tun Daim is not a member of the startup community as well. So there is just this preponderance by the government to focus on the big guys, right? The GLCs and the capital markets, and very little for the small guys.
Yeah. And, you know, speaking about startups and all this agency, I wonder if we have to go deeper than that. It has to go way back through our education level when it comes to primary or secondary, and I think that's where more money should be placed in. Let's not deny the fact that we do have a lot of these agencies, and they've been around for quite some time now, haven't they? And again, we have, you know, I'm sure there has been some few success stories, but not a lot of those unicorns, for an example, like Grab. But even they have shifted their operations in Singapore as well. So I wonder if we have to go, yeah, the discussion has to not just look into agencies on the management level, but even beyond that, I mean, education.
Yeah, long-term planning for the startup scene in Malaysia. All right, we'll be coming back with more discussions after this. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, this is the morning run. That was Sugar Ray with Someday. You're with Julian, Lin and Sherrod. We have a few tweets and WhatsApp messages coming in. Ezra Zaid, I know this guy. He has a few recommendations. OJ Made in America, Wormwood, The Jinx. He also said that the number of people who haven't watched The Staircase is very concerning. So he's going the other way to argue that we should all watch this. And he says that we are watching it because we are very stable people.
Yeah, we are. And I was
totally.
I don't deny it. Yeah.
I'm one of them that was able enough to watch Michael Peterson. And it's if you guys haven't watched it, it's about Michael Peterson himself. I mean, he filmed himself during the whole time, during the trial, the whole, you know, during that whole period. And, you know, from the starting, how he was at the beginning and after that he was convicted. And then,
A healthy dose of narcissism.
Better hold myself back.
Yeah, no, I am one of these concerning people who have not watched any of these movies or films that Ezra has named. So sorry, Ezra, I will try and remedy them in future.
Okay, what other messages do we
have?
Yeah,
so we got a WhatsApp message from Joe Lin or Jean. So this is with regards to the startup in Ipoh. KL people have no idea about how much more efficient life is in small towns. No jams, travel time less than 30 minutes, cheaper cost of living. And that's why those smart people relocated to Ipoh. So way better quality of life and work balance. Nothing great about the transport system. Well, she's saying that there's nothing great about transportation system in Klang Valley. Most people still need to drive wherever they're going, to, and which makes
sense.
Is there a better public transport system in Ipoh? I don't know. I've never been there.
It's actually a very quiet town. So she's saying that everything is within a 30 minutes radius, which I agree with. But I still think that in order to have a vibrant startup community, I mean, it's exactly that. You need a community. So you need a center where people can tap into each other's knowledge and wisdom about how to do things, right? That's the idea behind Silicon Valley and other places with such vibrant communities. It's not just about the availability of tech and being able to do things in the cloud. I mean, if you had one or two cases of companies starting up in a small town, I mean, fine, if one of those guys quits on you, then, you got to look for somebody, and where would that next person come from?
Hey, you never know. Ipoh is a valley. Silicon Valley is a valley. I think it's... I feel like, personally speaking, I am very attached to my little corner of the Klang Valley. And I see that there it would be very difficult. So things like transport, but at the same time, you do have that very vibrant business ecosystem, because KL is the central business district.
Yep.
So I don't really see that necessarily moving away anytime soon.
Right.
Plus, there is an unfair advantage for KL as well, because the government, a lot of the tax advantages, for example, pioneer status for the MSC, right? The multimedia super corridor, that's in the Klang Valley. So if you want to take advantage of those tax allowances by the government, you got to be stationed in the Klang Valley. But don't get me wrong. I mean, I love Ipoh. I have chicken rice recommendations to make in Ipoh. We have this other WhatsApp from Kalai, who says that Ipoh does not need a new master plan. Everything is within 15 minutes reach. Also echoing the WhatsApp from Jolene. All right. At the 7 a.m. After the news, we will be bringing you the international market roundups. And in the meantime, here's Rolling Stone with Start Me Up, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.